You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
You know, when we first started that thing where it says troll on in, sometimes we are talking about trolling. Sometimes we're talking about longlining. And sometimes, you know, people always ask me, do these longline boats, when they're on their way 500 miles to go fishing, do they troll on the way? You know what? These guys are in a hurry. They're steaming. However, yes, they do, because they every now and again, they're just like us. They want to get a nice big Mai Mai on the line. All right. Last week was part one of a two visits with Asuka Ishizaki. She is the protective species coordinator at the council, and it's been a guest regularly. Last week, we talked about some really interesting stuff happening in the shallow set swordfish fishery, with regards to turtles and interactions and everything else. And a lot of that information, by the way, is available online at the council's website. When you want to see stats and studies and what's going on in the fishery, make it a regular visit, wpcouncil.org. And this is part two, and we were saying Merry Christmas last time. Now we're saying Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Say, nice to have you back. Okay, now we know that, you know, last week we were not able to do, you know, everything in one bite. So we'll put to bed for the time being, as tasty as they are, the swordfish, and talk about some other stuff.
So we can talk a little bit more about the troll fishing, the pelagic small boat fishery, as we call it, a little bit close to shore, and what we're planning on doing for 2020.
Yeah, and we also want to make sure that you understand jurisdictional stuff. I mean, you know, when we talk about DLNR and we talk about a space going out, you know, not a couple nautical miles and some other things, but something that comes up all the time, and from a science standpoint, you can explain. The fish don't know where they are. Sometimes they're inshore, sometimes they're outshore. Some of the pelagics and small boat stuff that we're talking about now, they could come right up on the beach, or they could be 100 miles out.
Absolutely. And a lot of times when, you know, we're talking about pelagic small boat fishery, these troll guys, you know, you guys are out there in the federal waters, which is 3 nautical miles or out. You're also targeting stocks that are managed under the federal management system through the council process. And so, you know, when you talk about ahi, when you talk about mahi, ono, all of those things are, you know, highly migratory species that do fall under the council's management.
Yeah, authority. And it's fascinating, because a lot of people don't understand that. But once you do, you get it. And then it makes a big difference. And I think the neat part about that is that the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council is a bottoms-up organization. They are constantly recruiting within the fishery, and I want to make sure, and Asuka does this so well, we've done this for years together. There is a huge difference, but yet a lot of similarities in what we're talking about. Not all these boats are longline boats. Some are 28 feet long, but they're commercial fishermen. And here in Hawaii, isn't it sort of unique to some of the other districts that we have people that are, they don't think they're commercial, but they are, because they sell one or more of their fish.
Exactly. So the state of Hawaii's CML, the commercial marine license, right? So if you sell one fish, even one in a year, then you should have that marine license, and you have the responsibility to report. And that's great, because we, you know, get that commercial data from a lot of the fishermen who would otherwise be, you know, considered non-commercial or recreational. But here, you know, that data is collected through that commercial system. Now, what we don't have, though, is the guys who are entirely non-commercial and don't have a CML and just go fishing. There's a big data gap there in terms of, you know, how much fishing effort is out there that's not
how much
under
they're catching.
The CML,
yeah,
and
exactly.
How much is, you know, they're catching. So that's actually going to be one of the things that the council is going to be taking a look at, to see where are the data gaps, what do we know, is there a management issue that the council needs to be paying more attention to in working with the state of Hawaii.
What I also think, and I think it's marvelous, is that sometimes some of these fishermen are actually seeing the reason why they should be working with everybody, because there's nothing worse than saying, okay, there's going to be a law, and after a certain day, you can't catch ahi. You know, and they say, wait a minute. But isn't it also interesting when the fish are running, when you go to like small boat harbors like Waianae, where you see dozens and dozens and dozens of boats launching, they're all going out and they're all catching ahi, you think, are they catching them all? You know, so there are concerns, aren't there?
Yeah, and the fishery data, the catch data, is critical in fishery science and the management of it. And so if you don't have data, you know, you get junk in and junk out. And it's important that I think a lot of people in Hawaii, a lot of fishermen in Hawaii, especially, you know, the people who go out on boats, understand the importance of contributing their own data. Because if they don't, it looks like nobody's fishing. And that could be bad, too. It could look like there's not a whole lot of fish
out
there.
It could look like there's no fish. And once you say there's no fish, they start saying, all right, then we have to limit them. And I do know that there's been a tremendous push to maybe license fishermen and more doing stuff, and particularly with the commercial. But they're even talking about recreational fishermen being registered and asked to report. Because you say, and you said garbage, I called it GIGO before, garbage in, garbage out. And isn't that a real bugaboo? And haven't there been some tremendous improvements in assessments because of technology and other things that are helping you all make decisions?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the bottom fish fishery in Hawaii is a really good example of that. Yeah. We had a stock assessment, you know, over 10 years ago that said the stock was not in good condition. After that, there's been a tremendous effort to do more fishery independent surveys, the grid surveys, you know, making sure that the data going into the assessment is fully vetted with the fishermen so that the scientists running that data understand what those numbers really mean.
Amen.
And that has really made a difference on that catch limit that the council sets. So that's a great example of how fishermen being in the process, you know, providing that data contributes to, feeds back to better fishing for them.
You know, I had an opportunity of being part of a panel at the University of Hawaii about fishing. And one of the things that a young student brought up was really interesting. And I thought, boy, this kid's got it. And that was, she said, okay, let's say that our population is growing at 3% a year on Oahu or in Hawaii. And that means that there's 3% more people that want to eat fish this year than there were last year. Are the fish populations growing? And you'd have to say, well, wait a minute. They have their own game. They have their own food chains. They have their own way of limiting or not. So the answer is no. Just if you put more people on the island that want to eat more fish, there aren't more fish. You know, there's a set amount of fish. Are we concerned about that? Do we get it?
I think under the council's management system, it allows us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done that with the bottom fish. You know, we do that with the pelagic longline, you know, fishery. I think that one of the gaps is the other pelagic fish, like mahi and ono, you know, all of that. We don't have robust stock assessments for them yet.
Yeah. Kind of hard, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. But I think there's a need to do that so that we're managing well. There's fish for everybody, and that we, you know, can take a look at that. So that's something that the council is going to be looking at in 2020. We'll be going out to doing some scoping to look at what the issues are, look at where the data gaps might be, and to start that conversation of, you know, what do we need to do better for the future?
Yeah, and one of the things that I really appreciate about that, and Asuka was talking about this earlier, and that is guys like, you know, my dear friend Roy Morioka and a lot of these other guys that are experienced, good commercial level bottom fishermen that gave up time catching and doing this thing. And the results of fruits of their labor, Asuka, was that some of these perfas, about half of them, were eliminated. And I do know that there's still concerns saying, well, when are they going to eliminate the other half? But isn't that something that everybody's taking a look at to see if the science supports being able to open again some of those places?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And that's been a big push from a lot of different groups recently that, you know, because the bottom fish are doing well, we have the catch limit system that does really well with the management of bottom fish. And so do we still need those BRFAs? Let's take a look. Let's take a look at the data and see if we still need them. And then people really, you know, making the effort to work with the state in going towards that direction of removing them.
And I really like that because I take a look at some of these BRFAs and say, why is that there? And does, once again, when we talk about the difference between inshore and offshore, 3 nautical miles, the Mai Mai school that goes by Diamond Head doesn't necessarily, oops, we're in the 3 mile limit, let's go outside so nobody catches us. What is the useful intent of being able to do that. A lot of people think they're just trying to regulate us and decrease catching. That's not it at all, is it?
No, and you know, I think the beauty of the council is to be able to go through these public discussions and identify where the management issues are and address them. For example, back in early 1990s, when the longline fishery used to fish a lot closer to shore, there was a lot of conflict between the small boat guys and the longline guys.
It was awful.
And so what the council ended up doing was to say, okay, let's create an area that segments it. Longline, you stay outside of 50 nautical miles. Small boat guys, then you have that access to the closer areas. And so that's been in place for over 20 years. And we really haven't done a whole lot of evaluation of what does that mean? Do the fishermen still fish in the same places? So those are the kinds of things that'll be part of that discussion
too. And you know, but once again, it all gravitates now around certain things, certainly technology. And every single year, and I know this program has helped in this effort, is more and more people are saying, okay, we are on the council. You know, it's not some government group that's coming in here not knowing what. I mean, look at how many times a scientist will be told, you know, this may be mullet season on this beach, but 2 miles down the beach, it's not mullet season until later on in the year. Isn't the generational inshore knowledge very valuable?
Absolutely. And I think, again, you know, that's the beauty of the council, to be able to bring in the fishermen and bring in that knowledge, have them be part of the process so that, you know, the sciences can, you know, can be informative, but it's not the only picture. The council looks at how fishermen, how fisheries impact people's lives, what fish mean to communities, you know, what it means to the economics of people individually and Hawaii as a whole, all of that, the safety to the fishermen, all of that we can consider when we look at management measures.
And, so, you know, I got something really interesting to tell you along those lines, and that is really quickly that a friend of mine who is on the weekends, he goes trolling with his friends, but he's a whipper and stuff. And what he does is sometimes on his way home, he'll stop at a beach park if he sees his buddies down there, and they'll go out whipping, they'll catch a puppy and go home and eat it for dinner. And sometimes it's not about the money, but it's about that's what I want, and I can't buy one. And there used to be a big scare, and I knew a lot of, we could go off on a tangent on this one. There was a big, big concern for a long time about what about ciguatera? What, you know, you can't eat fish that are inside. Isn't it interesting the way the scientific community has taken a hold of that and minimized its impact on people eating reef fish? More people seem to be doing it again because the ciguatera thing goes in big cycles, just like having fish and not. Is that correct?
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm not a ciguatera expert by any means. But yeah, I think the information that's out there for people, you know, that's important so that people are informed.
When you mentioned earlier, because I know we have a time limitation today, let's talk about, when we talked about the small boats, some of the things that might be happening in this year where you need help from the small boaters. When we say small boats, gang, we mean anything. Small boats. You can have a 17-foot Boston Whaler or a 38-foot, Kami Craft or whatever. We're talking about small boats under 40 feet or whatever.
Yeah, so I think as we go out and do the scoping, one of the things that we'll, you know, have to look at is, are there any, you know, protected species management issues that we need to pay attention in the small boat fishery? Now, I think some folks are familiar with the whole pantropical spotted dolphin, the porpoise school saga that we went through several years back, that, you know, there were some groups that saw the whole fishing on dolphins activity, you know, fishing around pantropical spotted dolphins, which happened in Kona and a little bit in Waianae, you know, as a potential risk to those animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of went in, looked at that information, gathered information and said, well, you know, they're really just fishing around them. They're, you know, the chances of the spotted dolphins getting hooked as a result of that is really slim.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. And let me tell you why, because a lot of guys that fish that are listening to the program now that fish off the grounds in Kona, they'll tell you if they're trying to get an aku or something to use as bait, live bait, that they come up with just the face on the hook because the porpoises are super smart. They come back and they grab that thing right behind the hook. They suck that meat out. You get the face, I get the meat. So I think that although it does happen, I've had it happen to me in my life, and I fish a lot, only twice. We hooked the dolphin, and both times it was able to be released. So they're pretty they're a little bit smarter than some other fish, I think.
Yeah. And I think the other one, you know, that we'll have to take a look at is false killer whales.
Yeah, so that's true,
the false killer whales around Hawaii is listed as an ESA endangered species. And then there's been some research work out there that says the false killer whales have these dorsal fin injuries that are consistent with line injuries, which Ben has been alluded.
You mean getting cut by a line?
Yeah. And the mechanism as to how that happens hasn't really been explained, but there are these, you know, scars on the dorsal fins that look like cuts from line. And so it's been implied that those are from fishing interactions. So that information is out there. Every time we talk to fishermen, they say, well, false killer whales, if those, you know, blackfish come around, we're out of there because the fish are gone.
The fish are gone,
When the blackfish are around. And so, you know, trying to find the true information, that what we suffer, you know, from is the lack of quantifiable information. You know, we hear a lot of that from the fishermen. We hear about the dorsal fin scars on the false killer whales, but we don't have the actual data of
how it happened.
You'd
be sure not to see that,
you know,
wouldn't
how frequently fishermen are encountering false killer whales, what happens, you know. And so, you know, do we need to do more on that front? You know, that's the kind of discussion we'll need to have.
Yeah, and there's another little sidebar to that, and that is, you know, more and more people are concerned about areas that are closed because they're sanctuaries for this or sanctuaries for that. And, you know, you are a protected species coordinator. So you specialize in observing what are happening to these things. Are they lessening? Are they growing? Is it about the same? But there's some fishermen that say, you know, by the time you start having where you can't do this and you can't do that, and this area is for whales, where in the heck are we going to fish? So we doesn't that also need to be addressed?
And I think, you know, if there's a real issue where there's impacts from fishing on, you know, dolphins or whatnot, then we should be addressing it. But we also shouldn't be jumping to conclusions saying that, oh, there's, you know, false killer whales with line injuries out there.
Yeah.
Therefore, you cannot fish. That's definitely not the way to manage. So I think part of the scoping that we'll be doing next year is to look at, you know, what are the issues, including protected species, start that conversation and see where we need to end
up and
in
you know what?
Management.
That is great. So, I mean, obviously, a lot of the things that you do at the council go around, you know, specific things that must be accomplished every year, whether it be stock assessments or valuations. But it also might be nice to be able to know that you will respond to it. If people want to know what's going on, first of all, you go to wpcouncil.org and you can see some of these things. So there will be specific programs and studies be made in the year 2020 that we're going to get, that we're going to gather on. What are some of the things that you are looking forward to personally? Where do you want to see us go this year?
I think continuing to work with fishermen, the industry, and, you know, without that partnership, the council doesn't mean a whole lot.
Yeah.
And so I think being able to reach out to the communities and this, you know, scoping effort will do that, and continuing to find better ways of managing that works for the fishermen, the communities, in addition to working for the resource themselves.
I think it's a two-way street.
It really is. And so I think continuing is definitely our challenge for 2020.
And I sort of expect that. I hate to put Asuka on the spot, but that's sort of what I expected. And mainly because, and I'm the same way, you know, I was, one thing I just want to maybe get your acknowledgement from. I am so pleased of the effort that we put forward. It started about 10 years ago to make us realize and to make science realize that we had an indigenous yellowfin and maybe even an indigenous big eye population around Hawaii, that we're not going, we don't have to go sometimes thousands of miles to catch these fish, but we do have to manage, if they are ours, we have to start managing them a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot we don't know, even big eye. We don't really know where they spawn. And so, you know, doing more studies on that, better understanding how much there are, making sure that we're not, you know, catching too much. All of that is part of the core of what the council does.
One friend of mine says, you know, he's been fishing for 35 years, never seen the baby big eye. He's seen a lot of oi oi and a lot of little aku.
Mm-hmm.
And he's seen, you know, little shibi. But they're coming from somewhere, you know, and now there are more people saying that, hey, you don't see them because they don't want to see you until they get a little bit bigger. They're sort of protected. Anyway, I always appreciate being able to spend some time with you, Asuka, and I do know that there's a lot more than the council, you know, has to offer. And I think that that website, WPCouncil.org, you go back home and tell everybody, hey, more people are lighting up and saying, now I get it. I read this or I read that, now I get it. So let's hope that we have a very happy new year.
Yep, happy new year.
See you again soon. Okay. And if you want to hear something on the program, it is duck soup or fish soup, okay? TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. So that being said, we hope that you've had a happy one and continue to be that way. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, if you want to hear something on the program, let me know. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. Happy fishing.